Jazz guitarist Bucky Pizzarelli died April 1st from COVID-19 at the age of 94. Bucky continued to perform into his 90s, even after a stroke and pneumonia led to several hospitalizations in 2015 and 2016. In spite of all that, by the end of 2016, Bucky was back in action. This was a man you couldn't keep down. I was the artistic director for a festival in Brazil for years, and in 2009 brought Bucky as one of my featured acts. This was a festival in 6 different cities, so I had a lot of tricky logistics to deal with and many cranky musicians. Bucky, then 83, was the sharpest dresser, never complained, was always cheerful, and the first to be ready for his sound check every day. He was a wonderful role model for everyone, an example of a life well lived. Today we revisit my 2010 conversation with Bucky about playing with everyone from Benny Goodman to Stephan Grappelli and discuss why he thinks it's so hard to find musicians today who play great rhythm guitar. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired.
I first heard Joe Mooney in Paterson, New Jersey, a blind accordion player, playing at the Sandy's Brick Bar on a Sunday afternoon. And I was going to high school, and all my musician friends that were going to that were in high school with me went down to listen to Joe Mooney. On Sunday afternoon, we sat there drinking Coca-Cola, but we knew that Joe was a great talent.
And you have that vivid of a memory of
definitely,
it.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And he was improvising. It was a full-on jazz thing.
Oh, yeah. My uncle played guitar with him, Bobby
Dominick. Oh, so you knew about that.
Yeah.
So were there many people playing jazz accordion? I love it when people bring that up because there really aren't now that we think of.
Not like Joe Mooney.
What made him special to you? What stood out?
He played all chords. It was like an orchestra. He had no left hand, no bass notes on his accordion. He just played the one side, the keyboard side. Yeah.
I'm picturing that. Well, why? That's just the way he had learned how to do it?
Well, he could do everything with the one hand. They don't have C and G 7 and F on you know.
Right.
They have 125 bass notes. He didn't use the bass notes.
That's remarkable.
Yeah.
Well, you really enjoy playing with piano players.
I do.
And I know that people have talked to me about it because the first instrument I always choose when I'm putting a band together is guitar. And I've had people say that to me. Well, why would you be choosing guitar? It's another chordal instrument. But talk about that and how you make all that work and why you like that combination so much.
Well, if I can use John Bunch's name, we had a group called New York Swing while he was in New York with Jay Linhart on bass. And we did some of the things that Joe Mooney used to do. We took him off the record and we played him as a trio.
Thank you. For people who don't play guitar, for our listeners that don't that think that every guitar has the same amount of strings or the same type of string, talk just a little bit about that, why that impressed you, why that was different, why you're playing the kind of guitar you are now, what you're able to do up there with that.
I always wanted to play Lush Life because I heard Joe Mooney play it. See?
Joe Mooney's a big influence here.
The biggest.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do it on my six-string guitar. I didn't have a low D-flat. And when I got the seventh string, I started fooling around with it. I said, there, whatever bass notes I had them there, right under my fingers. And that's what made me continue on with the whole thing.
That was really a difference for
you. Yeah, then I teamed up with George Barnes, who was a great, great single-string soloist from Chicago.
Mm.
He was on staff when he was 16 or 17 in Chicago, and he came to New York in 1950. And I did a lot of recordings with him, playing rhythm behind him on a lot of sessions. But they used three and four guitars in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And we got sick and tired of doing these playing triplets. So we took a job playing in down at 51st Street, at 51st and 10th. Kenny Burrell had a jazz club there called The Guitar. And we were there, and it didn't pay any money at all, like $20. But we go, after a long day of studio work, we go there and play all night long. And George and I made a lot of, well, we made two records. One live record at Town Hall, and we made another one. And it was very exciting for me, because all I did was accompany him.
And you enjoyed that?
Oh,
You never took a solo? You were just...
No, very little solos. No, not really. And then I accompanied him, but then later on, after we split up, I start playing solos on my own. I played a little club on 74th Street called the Sorabaya. I played there all by myself playing everything I knew.
And did you enjoy that? Because that was a big difference.
Oh, I did. It was after my studio, all day work in the studios. I went there at night and played for 3 or 4 hours. And that's how I learned how to play solos on the seventh string.
Because when you were doing studio work, you were mainly doing rhythm.
Rhythm, and I played some bass lines on a bass guitar, a six-string bass guitar. It was a regular guitar, an octave lower.
This is going to be a funny question, or not even a question, but I'm fortunate in that I've played with a few really great rhythm guitar players.
That's right.
We need to play together because we haven't done that yet. I'm looking forward to that someday. But the great ones, like you, for me, because I've talked to them about this, they really are committed to rhythm. Like you were saying, you like
it's a lost thing now. The kids don't even own a rhythm guitar.
No, we'll talk about that because it's a different focus, and I know that it's an important thing for our audience, and it's one of the
kids,
things I was looking forward to talking to you about.
Yeah, kids come up to me, and they want to play rhythm guitar, and they come in, they walk in the house with a Les Paul electric guitar. I say, how are you going to learn how to do that? You got an acoustic guitar, you got to know how to hit it, listen for the decay. And if it's a good guitar, it's going to have a nice little long sound that goes with it. And there are very few, maybe four or five guys in New York that really know how to do that, like James and Chris.
Mm-hmm.
And Barry Galbraith was really a great exponent of the rhythm guitar. He used to play like Freddie Green, a real refined stroke he had. You can hear a lot of his work on Les Elgart's band.
But it's very subtle, as you were saying, that listening to the decay the way it is, because it's...
Look, Count Basie's band never sounded the same when Freddie Green left.
And isn't that interesting?
Right? Right?
Oh, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I found it fascinating, that recording he did with the duet. I think the second duet recording that he did with Oscar, he didn't use Freddie. I could be wrong on this, but I know there was something that he did that it was a follow-up, and it didn't sound like the Basie group anymore.
No. You got to hear that little thump in the back.
My guest, guitarist Bucky Pizzarelli, with his tribute to longtime Basie guitarist Freddie Green, with Warren Vacher on cornet, John Bunch on piano, and Mickey Roker on drums. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Not many people mentioned to me, you in passing talked about Carl Kress and Dick McDonough. When did you first hear those recordings? Do you remember?
Oh, my uncle played a few for me when I was studying, and I was very impressed by the two. They put on two Gibson L5s, and it was incredible music. I just couldn't believe it. You know, they were playing quarterly. You don't know who was doing what, and they were making a lot of music. They sound like an orchestra.
Do you know, when I heard those recordings, that was the only time that I thought about playing another instrument. And that's a big compliment, because piano, you've got it all.
I know.
But I thought, maybe I could take up guitar, because I love those recordings so much.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah.
They really are.
Masterpieces. Thank you.
Do you have trouble when you're recording in a new studio, somewhere where you haven't been? I'm saying that we're at NOLA now, where we know Jim Zach, and he knows what you like and that. But if you're in a studio that you've never been before, is it hard to convey to them what you want in a really warm guitar sound?
Well, all I do is say, look, I want a 44 ribbon microphone. If you want me to play rhythm guitar, that's what you got to have.
Mm.
It's that little octagon shape.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a favorite of Les Paul. Les Paul was a, I don't know how I would say it, but an expert on rhythm guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And he played electric guitar all his life. But he knew how to record a rhythm guitar.
Mm. That's why I was asking that, because it's a very specific thing to get that
sound.
Oh,
yeah, and then if you ask for that and they used to give you a little pea shooter mic, you know, you're in for it.
Then you think I've done all I can.
I tried.
I put my effort in.
That's right.
That's funny. Talk about Bud Freeman, recording with him, because I love Bud Freeman.
A good friend of mine, and we got to know each other on these jazz parties out in Denver. And I think it was Bob Thiel put us together. He flew Bud in from Ireland. I think he was there for a while. And we got together in around the Americana Hotel, and we put an album together. And it was fabulous playing with that guy, I'll tell you.
What was special about Bud? I love Bud, but we haven't talked about him on this show for some reason. Nobody's brought him up. Talk about Bud for those who don't know about Bud.
Bud was one of the great tenor saxophone players of all time. I think he was the favorite of Lester Young. Stories about Lester loving the way Bud looked, but he always wanted to look like a prince, you know.
Oh, really?
And Zoot Sims was going to buy him a mirror so he could look at himself all the time.
Well, you know.
But I'll tell you, when he played, he looked great. He looked and sounded great.
Well, it was Eddie Condon. I've read
That's right.
Eddie Condon always said that no matter how, I'm going to get this wrong, but it was something like no matter how much you have to drink, as long as your hair is combed.
Yeah.
As long as you look sharp. And when you look at those
That's
old
right.
pictures of Eddie Condon,
oh, yeah.
His hair is always slicked back.
That's
and
right.
You look at his face and you'll think, this man's had a bit to drink.
Well,
but he always looked sharp.
Yeah, they had an Eddie Condon's club, the last club on 54th Street, I think it was. You look at all those old-timers jamming, they all have three-piece suits on, bow ties, boutonnieres, and everything, striped suits.
They all look great.
Nobody had a T-shirt on.
Well, you know, talk about that a little bit, because something I was struck with last time I heard you play, when we were in Brazil together,
right.
But not playing together,
yeah.
And I was sitting with another musician, and we were commenting on the fact that there were three musicians who were kind of old school, which were the rhythm section.
Yeah, that's right.
Old school, and I don't mean old. It's old school. It's a way of thinking.
Right.
And then there was, except for the drummer. The drummer was kind of, oddly,
yeah.
The drummer was not sitting with the rhythm section,
no.
If you remember. So now that I'm thinking about it, he was over with the horns.
Yeah.
And you were all, the
yeah,
rest
right
of the rhythms
side,
that were
yeah.
on the side. And there was such a divide.
Right.
Because the one side was very casual. Casually dressed, kind of sloppily dressed, and you all looked as sharp as could be.
I know.
Suits, ties.
I was always brought up that way. I mean, that's, listen, if I don't play the guitar, I'm going to wear a shirt and a tie all the time.
Well, I think that way. Do you feel that?
Yeah.
Well, it's still an entertainment. We're showing up.
We used to dress up during Depression with a suit on Sunday, automatically.
Automatically.
Yeah.
Why do you think that's changed so much?
I don't know. Everything got so lax. Some restaurants wouldn't let you in looking like that, but now they have to let you in because they wouldn't do any business.
Mm. But even the musicians.
I know.
I would think that the restaurant would be happier if the musicians were dressed in some way.
Oh, definitely. You got to look good.
Yeah, I would think so. Well, I think it's also it's an attitude. It's funny. I did a jazz festival in Australia, and it was the last night, and I had a septet, and they'd given me six guys I didn't know. And I had a dress that I'd worn at Dizzy's, off the shoulder. I mean,
it was
formal.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, just for fun, because this was up in the mountains, it was very casual, jeans, the whole thing. I thought, I'm just going to come up on stage and really be dressed up and see what happened. Sure enough, I'll tell you, those guys played better.
Yeah.
They all kind of sat up. I said, I think these men need some inspiration.
Right.
And a couple of the older musicians were in jackets. But it was funny when I walked up on this thing, they all sat up.
My Uncle Bobby, who played with a lot of bands, Buddy Rogers, Clyde McCoy. And I have pictures home with him. He's on a polo field with Buddy Rogers, and the whole band's all dressed up. Black and white shoes, a tie. They're watching him play polo. And Mary Pickford sitting along with him, you know. And I said, look, these guys are sharp. And that's
absolutely
the way I want to be.
Exactly.
That's how it came about.
Yeah, I think it's an attitude thing. Because even when bebop came in and the guys were kind of shifting attitude, they still look great.
Yeah, that's right.
Those old pictures of Monk and those guys, they were very, very sharp.
Charlie always had a tie-in.
Yeah, yeah. What's your favorite kind of group, favorite instrumentation? If I just wave a magic wand now in the Carmichael universe and you have unlimited funds.
Well, I always liked the guitar trio because of the Nat King Cole thing, you know.
Mm.
And I think if you're going to add another guy, you add drums and a vibe like Jake Short, George Shearing.
Mm.
That's another great sound.
Yeah, it is a great sound.
Yeah.
George Shearing Quartet on Lullaby of Birdland. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired.
Thank you.
I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Our show is made possible in part with generous support from Steinway & Sons. Additional support is provided by Jazz Times Magazine, providing entertaining and provocative coverage of the jazz scene since 1970. On the web at jazztimes.com. Listen to Judy Carmichael's Jazz Inspired on all the usual platforms and visit us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Stride Queen. Guitarist Bucky Pizzarelli passed away April 1st from COVID-19 at the age of 94. Today we're revisiting my 2010 conversation with him. When you put on something now when you're listening to music, because you still listen and put things on, you don't.
I never listen anymore.
You don't?
No.
Why? When did that change?
I don't like handling records and throwing them in and out and sitting around. It's like turning on a TV set, you know?
Really?
I said, when I go to turn on a television, I say, oh, I put it down and I go over to the guitar.
Well, that is more productive.
I know. That's what I do.
You'll just
because
pick up
the guitar. Because I have a big thing in my brain, you know, and it says, get over to the guitar, forget the TV. Forget playing a record or anything. It's you.
It's always that. So how much do you play a day then?
All day.
So you'll play guitar all day?
All day.
Oh, you do?
I got up 7 o'clock today.
And you were playing, how many hours did you play?
I left 1 o'clock.
And you were playing guitar the whole time? Really?
Yeah, just playing.
And what do you play when you're
well,
doing
that? Well, you know, I listen, I have a friend, when we drive to a gig, he's got all these records on, you know, and geez, I looked. He said, I couldn't even remember some of the things that I had done years ago, you know.
Oh, he had some of your things.
Yeah, I had some big Spiderbeck stuff I had done, and I did some with 5 guitars with Artie Ryers and Tony Mottola, and I can't think of all the players on that thing. But anyway, I said, I got to learn those all over again. So I took the music out, and I'm starting all doing it all over again.
Some of the things that you used to play because you liked it.
Yeah, because you stop playing something, then you go to something else, and by you get to the end, and you got to go back to the beginning again.
Well, and then it's
but
different.
It never ends in a music business.
It doesn't. Well, it doesn't. And I think, isn't that what's great about it?
That's what I love about it.
Yeah. And you'll play these things differently going back
right
to them.
Now, today I was working on, what was that? Candlelights, a big Spiderbeck. A great piece.
I love that.
Yeah, I did it with 5 guitars, and after I heard it, the record, I did the record with Bill Chalice, who wrote the music down for Bix, a very great arranger for Paul Whiteman and Gene Golkin, fabulous talent. And he went to my record company, Bill Borden, had the company Monmouth Evergreen, and talked him into me recording with 4 other guitar players, 5 others, all big stuff, single notes, everybody, because he didn't like the way all the piano players played big stuff, because they all played everything too fast.
Well, isn't that interesting? So it was all arranged, which it would have to
every
be.
Every note. And then what he did, that after we made the record, he had control over every note. If something wasn't loud enough, he'd bring it up and to be equal. And that's what he missed when all these other piano players were playing Bix. He said, they're playing it too fast.
Interesting.
Oh, it was one of the best projects I ever did.
Really?
And I never knew. After In the Mist, I didn't know any of the songs, you know. In the Dark, Flashes.
I love all those songs.
Danforth Blues. Yeah. It was incredible. Thank you.
My guest, guitarist Bucky Pizzarelli on In the Dark. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. One of the things that I've been thinking about a lot lately, and you remind me of it thinking about, I'm having a little reverie thinking about five guitars, is as a pianist, I think about dynamics and all of that, but I've been singing now more recently, so I'm thinking more about that feeling and the resonance in here, and I've been doing that with, if I'm playing with saxophone, now I'm starting to think about vibrato in a different way, and I'm thinking how lovely with other guitar players, because you're getting that that tone and the resonance, something that we don't have on piano. You know what I'm saying?
It's a different feel. You know, when you hear the other guitars, the volume alone is enough to give you a thrill.
It is. Yeah. It is. I think it's one of the things, I talk about this a lot, or I bring it up, it's another one of my little stealth messages that I put out about when you're talking about amplification and things like that. Because in my own life, I'm so often playing on pianos that aren't the piano of my choice, or that they're an inferior instrument or something, because I'm in, you know, Myanmar or something. And then I'll play a great piano and I'll remember what it's like to be able to have control over that volume.
Right.
And playing with our friend James Trurillo.
Right, right.
When we were in Brazil together, I was really noticing that, because he loves to play softly.
That's the way you do it.
And it really brings it down so that you can get all the subtleties in a different kind of way.
And all the singer has to do is sing the melody.
Right. What a concept.
Well, the singers don't do that anymore.
They're
bebopping all over the place.
They do. They don't seem to.
They don't honor the melody.
They don't honor the melody.
The melody is the most important thing.
Mm.
You know, across the street we used to be Decca Records, and they had a big picture of an Indian with his hand out, and the caption said, "Where's the melody?" In the studio.
Well, speaking of that, who's a singer that you really love that you think sang the melody and honored the melody in a way that you really like?
The best was Joe Stafford.
Hide your heart from sight, lock your dreams at night. And
talk about Zoot Sims, because you mentioned Zoot.
Oh, Zoot was a special friend, and I did a lot of work. I learned a lot from Zoot. The same way, you know, I played with him. When I was playing alone, he sat in with me one night, and the boss of the club says, look, whenever Zoot wants to come here, he's welcome. And I said, that's beautiful. So whenever Zoot was off the road, he had a steady job with me. So we were in the club about 2 or 3 years. Just a duo. Mm. And everybody came up and sat in with us. We had Al Cohen and Mondell Lowe, Herbie Green.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I love Zoot. Talk about what was special about Zoot's playing, do you think? I mean, if you were describing it and perking people's ears up, who'd
well,
never heard
of it. Musically, when he played the melody, that was the first chorus. Mm. And then when he improvised, second chorus, third chorus, fourth maybe. And when he played the melody again, he was going out. It's that simple.
Yeah.
And that's what he did that all the time. Mm. You don't have to, nobody had to say a word. When you hear me playing the melody, boom, we're out.
Talk about this recording with Hank Jones. I'm a big Hank Jones fan. He's one of the first people I heard when I came.
Yeah, well, I played with him with Benny Goodman a lot, you know, and I did some studio gigs with him in the 50s and 60s. You can't go wrong with that guy.
Again, so elegant
him,
and simple.
Did you ever hear
simple?
Him do the very thought of you?
Mm.
Oh, all raised ninth chords.
Mm-hmm.
Back and forth, right down the line. They make it. They're hip chords, and they don't get away with. They don't get in interfere with the melody.
I always feel with Hank that, as you're saying, hip chords. He'll do these things, but they don't. It's sort. I think of it when a person who just uses a big vocabulary word, and you can tell that they've framed a whole sentence just so they could use that word.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or there's people that it's just, it flows off. With Hank, he's doing all these hip things, but they sound so natural. You're not going to think that it's anything unexpected.
That's
so
right.
Elegant in how it all
goes together.
Oh, when
he
plays
together. The very thought of you, I mean, that's a classic.
I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Talk about Joe Venuti.
I was very fortunate to meet him when he was much older, you know, in his heyday. And we played a few festivals here in New York. We did the Today Show with a, it was, I think it was, we were honoring Bix. And he knew everything. He played stuff that Bix never even, was never even published, music, you know. He played on a piano. Great musician.
I didn't know that he was a great piano player as
well.
Oh,
yeah. He sat down and played forever.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me, but that's... Well, that's such a special combination. I just love violin and
guitar. Oh, violin
and guitar,
you can't beat it.
It's great. And there just aren't that many people that play swing violin.
Well, I mean, he and Eddie Lang were fabulous. In fact, the guy who took Joe's place was Al Duffy from Jersey,
mm-hmm,
in Paul Whiteman's band. He played just like Joe.
Mm. You've gotten to play with so many great people.
Well, I played with Stephan Grappelli, you know.
And what was that like compared?
Oh, that was wild. Yeah,
compare that with Joe Venuti.
It was much different with him.
I know, they're much different. Well, talk about what's different about that. That's an interesting, not many people can say they played with both of them. Think about that.
I know.
So, I mean, who else am I going to get to ask this question, Bucky? You have to tell me everything.
No, but he was great. He was, you know, when you went to meet him, we played with the Boston Pops a few years ago, and I met him in Boston, and he had the violin in his hand. Next thing you know, we said hello, and next thing we're playing like 15 different songs.
That was it.
One after another. That's it. Okay, I'm following him.
We had a very different feel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very different. Yeah.
I mean, you're bringing your feel to it, so you're bringing it with that. But he had a very different feel.
Yeah, and then we did a tour with just bass guitar and violin. That's all we had. John Burr played bass, and it was very exciting playing with him.
I would think it would have to be.
Yeah.
But he didn't communicate a lot. He just played. And
no,
that
just
was...
played. That's it. You had to listen to what he was doing. That's all.
There's some musicians like that. I've had that where I show up, the person says hello, and then the end of the gig, goodbye.
I played with Joe once in the afternoon around here in New York, one of those afternoon jobs where, and like St. Peter's Church or someplace. And somebody else is, how about Tenderly? So he's okay. He goes, and he went, Tenderly.
Still got the sense of humor. Still got the sense of humor. Whew. What would you like to do? If you could put something together, what would you like to do that you haven't done? Because you've gotten to do so many things. I mean, you're still going strong. You're very healthy. You have more energy than most of the people I know. And you're certainly happier than a lot of people I know. I mean, in terms of having a good time. And I say that because I, well, we just talked about it, and I won't be specific about it, but I saw you on this one gig where things were kind of going off in different directions, and I thought, that's how I want to be. I want to be like Bucky. He's just playing. He's putting his head down. He's thinking, I got mine. You know? I got mine. I'm playing what I'm playing. And
that's right.
And that's what you have to
do. All. You can't get crazy about this.
No.
You just got to go straight ahead.
Straight ahead and strive for tone.
That's all.
Well, what would you like to do? Is there anything that you can think of that comes to mind that you would like to do that you haven't had the opportunity to do?
I don't know. I've made so many records that I can't think of. If I had to put 12 songs together, it would be very difficult.
That's it, because
you've done half of them. I've done them all. You know?
Well, that's it, because you've circled back around. Yeah, we're now finding out that you're learning things you already did.
That's what I'm doing. I'm learning the early songs all over again.
Well, and you'll do a whole different thing. And that's what's so nice with this, because you can record the same things in a much different way.
I understand them better.
And you're different, don't you think, when you approach these things?
Because
there's tunes I know that I've really liked, and I've tried to play them at a certain period.
I was playing this morning. I'm talking to myself.
Really? And playing something that you had played before?
I'm saying, hey, I said that. Why didn't I do that then, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was the Bucky to Bucky conversation.
Yeah. It's understanding music. You know, when I learn a song, I learn a song in blocks. I don't learn each note the way people think you do.
Oh, how do you learn? How do you do that?
I learn, like Honeysuckle Rose, the beginning, and there's a middle, and there's a beginning again.
Right. So that's how you think of the tune. Right.
And then if you don't know the song, like last night I played with Keith Ingham, and I said, well, we're going to do this song, and I said, the middle goes to E-flat. He jumped right in, and he knew what I was talking about.
Well, because it's the blocks. Like you say, that's how you think of it. Exactly.
It's two blocks, two big blocks. The first part, second part, last part's like the first part. That's the way it works.
Yeah. And so you look at it differently now.
Yeah, well, you learn. There's a lot of different songs that, you know, go different, like Come Rain or Come Shine. It's another ball game.
Yeah. I was just going to say, they aren't all quite like how you're saying that. What happened to those blocks? It's funny you say that, too, because I just said to Chris Florey that I wanted to sing that tune. And he said, exactly. He says, don't you want to sing any easy tunes? And it was the Come Rain or Come Shine. That's the exact example we were using. Yeah. Bucky, I am so glad you took the time to do this.
Well, thank you.
I've been such a fan for so long. And it's not easy for us to be in the same place and say, we're going to.
All right.
That's a promise, right?
Okay,
you aren't one of those guys that promises a date and then doesn't come through, are you?
No.
All right, perfect. Thank you, Bucky.
Thank you.
Today we revisited my 2010 conversation with Bucky Pizzarelli, who passed away April 1st at the age of 94. I hope you'll join me here next time when I talk with another creative person about how jazz has inspired their life and work. I'm Judy Carmichael, the host and producer of Jazz Inspired. My production engineer is Curtis Heidolf. You can download podcasts of Judy Carmichael's Jazz Inspired from all the usual podcast platforms or listen at jazzinspired.com. Our opening music was Airmail Special, and the mid-break music is a smooth one from my CD, High on Fats and Other Stuff. The closing music is Old Fashioned Love from my CD Trio. I'm on piano with Mike Hashem on sax and Chris Flory on guitar. Judy Carmichael's Jazz Inspired is made possible with generous support from our listeners and from Steinway & Sons. Although we broadcast on NPR stations, we are an independent production, not funded by NPR. We're funded primarily by your donations, so please visit jazzinspired.com to chip in. No gift is too small. For more information, visit jazzinspired.com or judycarmichael.com.